Today's reading is from Genesis. Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." So he called that place Mahanaim. Jacob sent messengers before him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, instructing them, "Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have lived with Laban as an alien and stayed there until now, and I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male and female slaves, and I have sent to tell my lord in order that I may find favor in your sight." The messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him." Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that were with him, and the flocks and herds and camels, into two companies, thinking, "If Esau comes to the one company and destroys it, then the company that is left will escape." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Well, the Joy Swing Orchestra will be back at the end to play a sending out song following the benediction. But would you join me once again just thanking them for their music today? Well, we're coming to the close in our summer series on the book of Genesis, looking at these many stories that are so significant for everything that happens following Genesis for the rest of the Bible. So next Sunday, for the last message, we're going to begin with a final exam. So come ready for your final exam at the end of summer school next week. But to start today, I want to give a sneak preview to what's ahead. In a few weeks, I'm going to be traveling with pastors of some of our largest United Methodist churches to England on a Wesley Methodist history tour. John Wesley, the founder of the Methodist Church, lived in England in the 18th century, and we're going to be traveling with some Wesley scholars learning about early Methodist history. So starting August the 23rd, we're going to begin a 7-week series on the history of the Methodist Church and John Wesley. And before you yawn, let me just say, I think we are going to find this a fascinating, insightful experience. I believe by the end of it, you will have never been so proud to be a United Methodist by the end of this series, and to appreciate the DNA of our church and what's in our history and who we're called to be today. So I'm looking forward to this series that starts on the 23rd. And a little teaser, I want to begin today with a story about John Wesley. John Wesley was the product of a reconciliation. He was the son of an Anglican priest named Samuel Wesley, and Samuel and his wife Susanna were both very smart, able, confident people who agreed on most things except politics. Samuel supported the King and Queen of England at the time, William and Mary. But his wife Susanna did not. She believed the rightful heir to the throne should have been James II, who was really deposed by William. So one night at the dinner table, and by the way, John Wesley was one of 19 children. That's quite a dinner table, isn't it? Samuel is returning thanks for the meal. He gives thanks for the food, for other things of the day, for the family, and ends the prayer saying, "And God bless the king and queen." And everyone in the family is supposed to say amen, which they did except Susanna. And he said, "My dear, why did you not amen my prayer?" And she told him why. And there at the dinner table in front of the kids ensued this big row that ended with Samuel saying, "If we shall have two kings, we shall have two beds." And he left the house. They had a separation for a while. And when one night he came back home, they made up. And 9 months later, John was born. So you see, we are sitting in a Methodist church today Because a couple who were mad and stubborn made up and reconciled. Reconciliation provides a future. Reconciliation provides a future. That's the theme of this story we heard a moment ago about Esau and Jacob. We've been talking about Jacob for a number of weeks. 2 weeks ago, we started the stories of Jacob involving his stealing of his brother's birthright through his mother's help in deceiving the father, just like they played out in the children's message. So Jacob had to run from his brother who vowed to kill him. And he went back to the homeland of his mother where he met a woman and not only married her, but her sister. So that meant he married cousins. And I'm not going to say anything about West Virginia this week. I have heard from the great state of West Virginia this past week. I love West Virginia. So Jacob and these wives have numerous children. The 12 sons become the 12 tribes of Israel. So now, because of conflict with his father-in-law, Jacob has to leave again, and he comes back home. He comes home with the apparent realization of this promise that started with his grandfather Abraham, that one day there's going to be a whole family, a nation of people to possess this land and to be my light to the world. Finally, it looks like this promise is about to take place. Except he first has to encounter his brother. And the whole future of this promise hangs in the balance of how this meeting goes. This is a story that is so cleverly told. There are a number of word plays in this story that for those the writer intended to be some of the first readers, they were not to miss some of these word plays that help us not only think about the tension and the power and the drama of this story, but our own lives as well. So here's what I want to do. I want to tell the story focusing on three of the important word plays in it and think about what it meant for the story and what it means for our story, and end each of these with a reconciliation lesson. What does it mean in our lives today as people who sometimes have conflict with folks we really care about, maybe people we're related to, people we love, and going through life without them is incomplete? And maybe sometimes a future hangs in the balance on how we work that out. And see what this story has to say to our own stories today. So the first wordplay I want us to think about is two camps. Two camps. If you would, take out your bulletin and look at the scripture lesson for today. The reading we heard a moment ago starts in the first verse of chapter 32. This is the beginning of the story now where Jacob is going to face his brother Esau. But before Esau is even mentioned, it said, Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's camp. So the story begins with this revelation that Jacob is in the presence of God. He's surrounded by angels. And what he says is, I realize I'm in God's camp. Now, a few verses later, we're going to read that when Jacob gets the report that his brother Esau and 400 men are waiting on him, he decides to kick in a little strategy. He divides his camp because he says, what if they come to kill us? At least maybe half of our people might get away. So he's dividing his camp. And the writer of the story wants us to think about this wordplay, God's camp and my camp. You see, my camp is the camp I run. My camp is what I'm responsible for in life. It's what I'm able to control by my own ingenuity and ability and resources. But I'm also in God's camp. And as a spiritual person, I understand that I cannot control all the outcomes of life, that I depend on God to control some things. And we understand that we all live in this tension of being in two camps at the same time. We are never so spiritual that we say, well, I just live in God's camp. I look to God to determine everything about my life. No, God says, I gave you a brain to use. I've given you some resources to use. I've given you some ability to use. Put those things into action. But sometimes we have to understand there's a limit to our ability. And we get to a place where we say, I can't control all the outcomes of my life. I have to look to God's camp. We're in two camps. So Jacob prays. And later in chapter 32, we read what he says to God in this prayer, a couple of important sections of the prayer. O Lord, who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred, and I will do you good. Deliver me, please, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I am afraid of him. Think about the beginning of the prayer. O God, who said, return. Whose idea was it to go back and face his brother? This was God's idea. Living in God's camp means sometimes I will have to face some things I would rather not face. Have you ever noticed that God's path to a new future often means taking us back to the past? That's what God's doing with Jacob. But that's not Jacob's MO. Jacob's MO is to run from his problems. When he had a problem with his brother years ago, he ran away. When he had a problem with his father-in-law, he took his family and left town really quick. And now God is saying, I don't want you to run anymore. I want you to face your brother. So one of the first lessons on reconciliation we see here is reconciliation begins when we determine that we are going to face tough issues with God's help. When we are willing to face something really hard that our instinct would say, let me just get away from that, let me avoid it. And we understand that we're surrounded with God's help, and God will help us face that tough thing. A woman from my former conference is a pastor and a very popular speaker. She goes to conferences all around the country very regularly. She tells a story about speaking at a conference one time, and at the end, she was greeting people, and this woman came up to her and took issue with something she said and ended up just accosting her verbally. And when she stormed off, my friend just stood there in front of other people, kind of shocked and embarrassed and didn't know what to do. Well, several months later, she spoke at that same location again. She was speaking to people after her message. She looked down the aisle, the very aisle she was planning to walk down to leave, and she saw this woman. And she said, right away, I had a knot in my stomach. I just immediately went back to the last time I saw her, and I started looking for another exit door. Have you ever done that? Have you ever been in the grocery store? And you see somebody, oh, I don't need any butter today after all. Going to head on down this way. That's what she wanted to do. But she said she felt God say to her in that moment, that's not what I want you to do. I want you to walk out that door. So she kept walking down the aisle, and when the woman saw her, she walked up to her, she braced herself, and the woman said, I need to apologize to you. The last time I saw you, I treated you very inappropriately. I was going through a terrible time. My husband had just been deployed to Iraq, and I was an emotional mess. I was mad at God. And I came up, and I just let all of those feelings come out on you. And you know, the funny thing is, the reason I walked up to you that day was to actually thank you for some of the things you said. See, she would have never heard that if she would have followed her instinct, which was to run. Reconciliation begins when we face tough things in life with God's help. We live in two camps. Another wordplay. Jacob, Jabbok, and wrestle. I think this wordplay was perhaps the most fun for the author. Listen to these words in Hebrew, and I beg apologies of my rabbi friends. Ya'akab, Yabak Ye'ebek. Can you see that the writer is probably having a good time using these words in the story? All of these words in Hebrew come from the same derivative meaning struggle. You see, Jacob, after his prayer that night, went across the Jabbok stream, and some mysterious figure met him in the darkness of night and began to wrestle with him. He was in a wrestling match that lasted all night, and he did not know until the morning light he was wrestling an angel of God. And when the angel could not prevail over Jacob, the angel touched him in the hip and made his hip go out of joint. Now, that's a dirty trick for an angel to do. But Jacob would still not let go. And the angel asked why, and Jacob said, I'm not going to let go until you bless me. Do you get what's going on here? Jacob, who used all of his ability to get worldly blessings, is now at a place in his life when he's willing to fight for God's blessing. When he's saying, you know what, those blessings may have been important in my life at one time before, but what I need to give all my energy to now is getting God's blessing. Would you just bless me? And there are some blessings that it takes a struggle to get. There are some blessings in life, they only come through pain. There's a Christian ministry called Celebrate Recovery. It's sort of a Christianized version of AA and NA, but it's not just for people with alcohol or drug addiction issues. As Celebrate Recovery says, it's for anybody with a hurt, a habit, or a hang-up. Well, that's just about all of us, isn't it? Well, they teach people who lead Celebrate Recovery, because most of the groups meet in churches, they teach the leaders, when somebody is telling his or her story and they start to cry, do not hand them a tissue. And it seems so uncaring, doesn't it? When somebody's crying, you hand them a tissue to say, you know what, I don't know what to do for your pain. It makes me hurt too, but I'm going to do the one thing, I'm going to give you a tissue. But you see, what they teach in Celebrate Recovery is that many times we don't make people's pain okay to express, especially in church. That many people feel like church is a place I've got to smile and fake it and pretend like my life is just fine. We've got to make church a safe place for pain, because pain is the road to healing. So let people cry so that you can let them know it's okay to express their pain. And there's another important lesson for reconciliation. In order for reconciliation to happen, many times, we have to be willing to be wounded. We have to be willing to let somebody get their pain out. Sometimes we're willing to sit down with somebody and have reconciliation, but the first thing we say is, now we're not going to bring up the past. We're not going to talk about the issues that have happened before. We're just going to talk about going forward, and we don't understand you can't go forward if you're still holding on to baggage from the past. But when we make it safe for somebody to let that out, and maybe they're letting it out at us, and maybe they're saying, I'm mad at you for this, I'm angry at you for this, it doesn't mean that they want to stay mad and stay angry, and it doesn't mean they really believe everything they say, but they got to get it out first. We have to make it okay to get that out. So a willingness to be wounded, because the path to reconciliation is a blessing that often comes through struggle. And then there's one more wordplay, a very important wordplay, present and blessing. Jacob is now going to face his brother. In fact, Jacob now has a new name. When he was wrestling with the angel says, I'm going to bless you, and I'm going to give you a new name. From now on, your name is Israel. because you have striven with God. So Israel now goes to meet his brother Esau, and he's still working out of his camp. What if I give some gifts to my brother? He tells messengers to go ahead of him and keep presenting these gifts so that by the time he meets his brother, maybe he'll be buttered up. Well, when they finally meet, the brother lets him know that he doesn't need all of these gifts. He says, seeing you is enough. There's reconciliation. But Jacob insists, please, if I find favor with you, then accept my present from my hand. That word present is the same word that was used back in chapter 27 when Esau learned from his father that his brother had stolen his birthright. Your brother came deceitfully and he's taken away your blessing. Blessing and present is the same word. What is Jacob doing years later? He's giving his brother his blessing back. He's given back to his brother what he took from him. And even when his brother says, I don't need that, Jacob says, no, but I need to. I need to do this because I play a part in what happened between us. I need to acknowledge that. What a great lesson for reconciliation. To be willing to acknowledge our fault in what we did. Sometimes our fault is big. And we need to go to the person, whether they say they need it or not. We need to let go of that and to say, I need to be honest about what I did. Sometimes the part we play is little. It's 10 or 20%. But we still need to say to somebody who greatly wounded us, I know that when I tried to wound you back, it must have hurt you. I know that when I gave you the cold shoulder, that must have wounded you. I know that what I said to other people about you, and maybe if we acknowledge our 10 to 20, they'll acknowledge their 80 to 90. But we all have to come to a place where we acknowledge the part we play. So two more observations about reconciliation, and then I want to close with a story. One observation is this. Reconciliation is not about restoring a relationship the way it used to be. It's about going forward in life. You see, at the end of this story, Esau and Jacob part company, and they are never together again. They didn't say, okay, let's get back like we were brothers again. Let's have all of our... No, they didn't do that. They said, we can now go forward in life and seek God's blessing for us and be okay with each other. That's the point of reconciliation. Not every reconciliation is about getting back together the way it used to be. It's about being able to go on with life. So the point of today's message is to not think about every person with whom you've had a brokenness in life and get your cell phone out when you get to the car and call somebody you've not spoken to in 20 years and go, you know, I was thinking about that thing that happened to us and, you know, do we still need to work that out? Are we okay? Oh my goodness, that's like digging up a dead corpse. But it's when we can't go on. It's when we can't wake up without that feeling like I want to kill my brother. That we have to say, I got to do something about this. And that's another observation. When we follow the steps of reconciliation, we make reconciliation possible, but it's not a guarantee. You see, we can't control reconciliation. We can't control that other person. We can't determine how they're going to respond. Only God can do that. We do our part praying that God does God's part and another person is open to that. The amazing thing in this story is not Jacob, it's Esau. When Jacob met Esau, Esau was okay. He wasn't out to kill his brother anymore. We don't know what happened. It happened off stage. We're not told in Genesis. But somewhere between his desire as a young man to want to kill his brother and now meeting him years later, he had let go of that. God had been up to something, and Jacob found out what it was. So let me close with a story. My first church, where I was a senior pastor, we made a tough call to let go of a staff member who was in a very, very exposed position, and lots of people in the church loved this individual. But we could not tell everybody just why this decision was being made, and it was out of concern for that person. So you can imagine how confused folks were, how upset they were, and the kind of spin that people put on it. Well, in our early service back in that time, we had a contemporary service. So the people who came to get ready would sing and go through the songs really early on Sunday. And one young woman who sang in the praise team, her husband would come with her and wait in the back of the sanctuary while they rehearsed. So I walked in one Sunday and I walked over to say good morning to him. And he said, "Don't you ever speak to me again. It's all I can do not to knock you on your back right now. You disgust me." I mean, I thought the guy was going to blow right then and there. And later in that week, when I was in prayer, I just remembered saying, "You know, God, this is too hard. It's just too, this is not how church is supposed to be. When you try to make decisions with everybody's welfare in mind and yet with an eye on the mission to be open and welcoming of other people into the family of God, and not everybody understands what's going on and you can't control what people, God, this is just too hard." And I had my own two-camp experience. I felt an awareness of God's presence, and God gave a statement to me that I have held on to through the years. Just a few simple words: time tells the truth. Time tells the truth. And what I understood that to mean was I can't control what other people think. I can only control how I live and being as faithful as I know how and trust that somewhere along the way, the truth comes out. Just let it go. It was not for another 4 years before that person spoke to me again. He called me one day and said, "I would like to eat lunch." And I thought what he was really saying was, "I would like to eat you for lunch." So I met him. I was right on the verge of taking a sabbatical. He said, "I know you're getting ready for a sabbatical. I'm sure part of the reason you need a sabbatical is just how tired you must be from the work in this church. And I know I'm probably a big reason for you feeling that way. I know I am greatly responsible for the wear and tear on your soul and spirit. And I want you to know that when I said the things I said to you that day years ago, it's because I did not understand. And I do now. I understand now. And I want you to know how much I respect you." Oh man, I broke down in tears. We hugged, just like these guys did on the stage. Other people in the restaurant were probably wondering what was going on. But he said, "I want to be your biggest advocate from now on." And for 7 more years, he was my biggest advocate. I understand what Esau meant when he looked at Jacob and said, "Seeing your face is like seeing the face of God." I get that. And when we practice what may seem like impossible steps, who knows, but that God may have worked beyond our understanding to lead us to a place where we go, "There's nothing better than that."